Welcome to the SBS Sports Talk Show, presented by the Sports Business Society at UVA. I'm Michael Rockless, one of your hosts, along with my co-host Mike Popper and our producer, Will Harden. Today, we'll get into our segments as usual, and then we will hit the main topics of the NFL Week 2 and looking forward to Week 3, as well as the NBA proposed lottery reform. Make sure you listen to this episode at 1.5 times speed. Hit it!
We like sports and we don't care who knows. From shooting hoops to the Super Bowl. We like sports and we don't care who knows. Football, tennis, hockey, golf.
So before we even begin getting into our segments tonight, I just want to give a big shout out to Matt Conrath, who came into our SBS meeting as a guest speaker on Wednesday night. He was fantastic.
He really hit it out of the park.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
For our members who showed up, Matt just gave an awesome look into what it was like being an NFL player from his perspective. And we really enjoyed it. And I think everyone who was there really enjoyed what he had to offer.
And also just shout out to the people that were there. Thanks for coming out. And you guys were really attentive, asked great questions. Really kept the conversation going, so it was a good start to the year for our guest speakers, for sure.
Yeah, we're really excited about those, as we've mentioned before, and Matt was just a great start, set the bar pretty high from our perspective. So we're going to jump.
You're listening, Matt. Thank you very much.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. So we're going to go right into our read option for this week. So, Mike, what do you got for me?
So another plug for SBS. One of our writers, Daniel Lowe, just submitted an article about the current state of the big man in the NBA. And to give you guys a little primer, here's what kind of was about. So it's for almost every team in the league, the trends that he indicated, that a center spaces the floor, improves their offense more than an equally effective center that primarily scores under the basket. So basically what he's looking there is he did a couple of cross analysis using some statistics like efficient field goal percentage, and basically just tried to look at, do spacing centers, you know, your Karl Anthony Towns, your Brooke Lopez that shoot from outside, provide more of an efficiency in offense than your DeAndre Jordans of the world. So what did you think of it? I know you read it, Mike.
Yeah, I thought it was really excellent. From our perspective, pretty good statistical look into it. Daniel kind of created his own metric that he used to kind of normalize things and try and draw some conclusions. And I thought it was interesting. One of the things that was most clear to me, and this article is already out, so you guys can take a look at it, is that when you, and this is follows intuition, which makes sense, but when you have a center who is not really good at spacing the floor, the assist percentage for the team goes way down. Some of the other statistics, as long as the center is not a bad offensive player, think like your DeAndre Jordans, as Mike mentioned, those guys tend not to have as negative effect on an offense compared to the guys who can space the floor a little bit better.
Yeah, and I mean, this is definitely probably the most statistical in-depth article we have. And I mean, just shout out to Daniel. He did a really great job here. And kind of an original idea to try and, nobody would have really thought to, of a way to break apart. And I thought his idea of breaking apart from zero to three, shots from zero to three, and then shots from 3+ feet out was a really great way to break it out. And, I don't really know about his data collection and how he did it, but, I'm very happy with how it turned out.
Yeah, I'm impressed myself, and pretty timely too. You know, you think about the NBA today. I mean, all these teams are moving towards everyone being able to space the floor and shoot, and this kind of reaffirms that in some ways, and in other ways, kind of opens your eyes to maybe a differing opinion based on the player you have. So I thought there were some really good takeaways from that. Also, he hit on maybe some other things to look at moving forward. So I thought that was overall a great read.
Yeah. So what do you got for me now, Mike?
Yeah, so my read is from an ESPN article about Alex Gordon, who, surprisingly, he was the batter that broke the record for most single-season home runs in an MLB season. So the article says so Alex Gordon is really, he's been the worst hitter by statistics this season, but really the article kind of is funny where it said he isn't really the worst hitter in the league, he just has just the worst hitter who has managed to hold on to a regular job all season. And it continues saying that the home run record has been absolutely shattered this year. The previous record was set in 2000, which of course was in the middle of the steroid era. And the most surprising thing to me is that they're on pace, there's still a couple weeks left in the season, to break or to surpass the 2014 total only 3 years ago in home runs by more than 2,000.
And if you guys have been following along with baseball, a little bit earlier in the season, there were a couple reports about the baseball is feeling different.
They're juiced.
I mean, this is pretty good evidence. And you also have, you know, blisters on hands of pitchers, which they normally have weren't there, right? So that doesn't just, these pitchers do this for a living. You know, they don't just peer out of nowhere. Something changed on the balls. And I think that it might be good for the game, but it's a change that they should own up to. And Manfred has so far denied all accusations, right?
Yeah. So I've actually been pretty, intrigued by this topic since it's kind of arose. I think it was about halfway through last season was when really reports of this and people who really dive into the statistics thought that it was feasible for them to be juicing the balls. There's some other potential explanations, like the batters, the way that they've kind of changed their approach. They're focusing on hitting more home runs or versus striking out. They're more accepting of one of those two true outcomes, as they're called in baseball. But to me, I've been a big proponent of the fact that the balls are juiced. And honestly, I mean, I'd like to hear your opinion as someone who's not as big of a baseball fan. But to me, I don't really have a problem if they're juiced. What I would have a problem with is if they are indeed, you know, doing something to the baseballs that make them go a little bit further. The fact that they've kind of covered it up, if that's what they're doing, I think I'd have a problem with that. Yeah. But if they just came out and said, this is what we're doing, like, you know, we maybe wanted to add a little jolt to offenses, right, which have been struggling, I wouldn't have a problem with that.
I mean, it's like, I wonder if it's a problem with they don't want to change too much. You know, they changed the intentional walk this year, right?
And they've done the clocks in between innings. And I think eventually they're going to add a pitch clock in between pitches when no one's on base.
Right. So I think they might be a little scared of just too much change too rapidly. But the way to go about that is not to take a change and do it under the hood. Yeah. You know, you got to be transparent in these kind of things because, you know, there are fans that are old school, and to ignore that whole part of the, you know, the fan base is kind of, it's tough. And when you have an organization that comes out and does stuff up front, you know, that always gets a better response than doing something in the background.
Yeah, and it's just kind of an interesting thing to me. Like, I think it's a great conspiracy theory, and it's really, I've seen some studies that have kind of said the balls are definitely juiced, and I've seen others that have kind of given some data that says they're not as juiced. For example, fly ball pitchers actually have been pitching better, which would be contrary to the intuition. If you break down, you know, fly ball rates, and those guys actually have performed better relative to what you'd expect with the in the period of the juiced baseball, quote unquote. But I think to me it's just kind of a funny topic, and really it's unbelievable when you think about all the guys who have hit over 20 or 30 home runs this year, kind of no name guys. That have just mashed home runs, and a bunch of guys, Aaron Judge and Stanton's gonna might get to 60. He's a couple four or five
exciting.
Away. Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I think it's good for baseball. I mean, the strikeouts are so high that when you put the ball in play, you know, all the pitchers throw harder, so maybe the ball go a little bit further. But when you put the ball in play, if you want to see excitement, that's what home runs do.
Stanton hit 56 tonight, so he's four away.
Four away from 60. Also, it was this afternoon, but thanks for chiming in with that
one. Well.
Yeah, I got that notification during class today, and they just keep giving that ticker on, so they want you to keep track.
When's the last time somebody got to 60?
I think it was Roger Maris. He hit 61. Well, this not including the steroid guys, so Sosa, McGuire, Bonds. So that would have been like 2003, 2001, 2002, that area. But no one's, I mean, the real home run record in people who want to discount the steroid era, which is a completely different conversation, is 61, which Roger Maris had with the Yankees. Will, you can get us the year on that. But
that's assuming Stanton isn't on steroids.
I don't think he's, but it's the baseball's reduced. So.
Baseball's reduced, yeah. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, all right, so we're going to transition into our Drop the Mic.
And this, Mike, your Drop the Mic this week is unbelievable.
Oh, mine's just a gold mine in terms of comedy. So I'm sure most of you have heard of this by now. Kevin Durant on the burner Twitter.
Unbelievable.
I'm not a big Kevin Durant guy. The move to the Warriors really bothered me as just a basketball fan in general. And then this guy, the audacity of Kevin Durant. This guy is the second best basketball player in the world. Surefire Hall of Famer. Coming off an NBA championship. This man, he has a Twitter account. Literally, a Twitter account that's not him. It's a different guy. And he goes on and defends himself, talking about himself in the third person.
It's unbelievable.
Who does that? Now, here's the thing, Mike. I got to ask your opinion on this, because this really shapes this whole topic. Is Kevin Durant doing this, like, seriously? Like, I need to go out and defend myself as a third person? Or is it like, I'm just going to screw with people on Twitter?
I think he's seriously doing
it. I think so too.
I think he is that self-conscious about his role in the NBA so far and how he has performed that he feels the need to defend himself against all criticism. And I read reports that after the free agency decision went down and he saw all of the negative reaction, he flipped out at his agent.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, he was like,
classic KD,
man. The quote was, "Why the F did you make me do this? Why the F did you let me ruin my life?" or something like that. And I think the man is just so self-conscious about what people think, he will go to Twitter to defend himself. He did it in a YouTube comment the other day. And this is the tweet. It's
almost like a disease that he has.
This is him on his Twitter account, his verified Twitter account.
Yikes.
quote, "Imagine taking Russ off that team. See how bad they were. KD can't win a championship with those cats."
Yeah, and I think the worst one from his perspective is when he went on and they said, the guy was prompting him on his like actual Twitter account. And they said, "Why'd you leave?" And he's like, "Oh, KD, don't blame him. He hated playing for Billy Donovan."
Yeah.
And all those players that he played with, they all stunk outside of Russ. Like, talk about throwing your former teammates
organization
and your coach under the bus. I mean, that was unbelievable to see that. Kevin Durant, and the funny thing is, like, I've seen him in interviews before. He's been on Bill Simmons' podcast several times. He was on Bill Simmons' show, and just even the way, and like, Kevin Durant doesn't care if I like him. He doesn't care if any of the fans really like him as a person. Just the vibe I've gotten from him, he doesn't pander to the fans, which, like, I get it from his perspective, but at the same time, like, fans aren't going to like you, and then you pull a stunt like that. It's criminally funny. It is so funny. And the fact that he couldn't pull the "I got hacked," I mean, it's just so embarrassing.
He came out and admitted it.
Right. Yeah, he had to. And it's just so embarrassing for someone like him to be. I mean, the thing that gets me is, the third person. Like, "Oh, don't blame
it's
KD."
Unbelievable.
Like,
it's something that you would expect out of, like, a teenage girl.
Oh yeah,
trying to defend herself.
The burner
on Twitter.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. So here's his apology. He says, "I don't regret clapping back at anybody or talking to my fans on Twitter. I do regret using my former coach's name and the former organization I played for. That was childish. That was idiotic. All those types of words. I apologize for that. I don't think I'll stop engaging with the fans."
Stop engaging with the fans. Engage with the fans as Kevin Durant,
not as
some weird guy without a profile picture. However, he was doing it in the past. But it's funny, like, it's just unfathomable that someone of his stature with, the status that he has to go on and do that. And it's really funny.
It's hilarious. At the end of the day, it's hilarious.
If you don't like Kevin Durant.
If you don't like Kevin Durant. If you're a Warriors fan, you're pretty pissed right now.
Yeah. So before we get into your drop the mic, Mike, we're just going to get our little stat correction thanks to Will. Roger Maris hit his 61st, his 61 home run season was in 1961. So easy to remember going forward.
Oh, that's very nice.
I should have had that down. I didn't. So we'll see if Giancarlo Stanton over the last 2 weeks, week and a half here can break that record.
And so he is the last person to hit 60 plus home runs other than Mark McGwire and Barry Bonds.
Okay. Well, thanks, Will.
Will, you're a whiz with the Google.
Yeah, with the Google. Way to go, Will. We'll hit up Will a little bit later to talk about an interesting certain game from last week. All right, Mike, give me your drop the mic.
All right, so my drop the mic is, I don't know if you guys remember this, a couple weeks ago I gave you guys a little bit of a primer on the fight that I thought was going to be the best fight of the year, Canelo Alvarez getting to Golovkin, and it lived up to the hype. But, as there always is in boxing, there seems to be some sort of collusion. One judge scored 118-110 Canelo. The other two had it as a draw, and I forget the exact score of Golovkin, but it was a pretty wide margin. And everybody knows that is a travesty.
The 118 to 110.
The 118 to 110 Canelo, because you're watching that fight. Golovkin is chasing him. He's landing more punches. He's landing better punches. I mean, I don't know if this dude got paid off or if he would just like the flashiness of Canelo, but it is honestly a travesty. And Mike, I know you're not a huge boxing fan, but you watched the fight a little bit, right?
Yeah, I watched it. I was half watching. I think it was on at the same time as that certain game we're going to get to, which is Texas-USC. So I was keeping a half eye on it. And then, to me, I can never tell who wins. I've watched the only fights I've ever watched. This tells you all you need to know about me as a boxing fan, was Mayweather-Pacquiao, Mayweather-McGregor, and then I watched this one half-heartedly. So I have absolutely, I have no clue what's going on. All I want to see when I turn on these fights, I'm willing to accept the human savagery of promoting the violence for like the 36 minutes these fights are on. And then I watch these fights and no one ever gets hurt. And they're like, okay. And that's kind of what I take away from it.
Okay. Well, if you watch the fight and you have a little inkling of knowledge about boxing, you would know how much of a travesty it was. But fortunately, camps are in the talk of another rematch. And hopefully, they both had some choice words for each other after the fight.
Yeah, of course they did. Golovkin, that stuff's all stage.
It's not. Golovkin called him out for running. Canelo said, we're going to fight next time. So hopefully we get some fireworks for you next time. I'll call him up and let him know that you weren't appreciative of the lack of knockouts.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the opinion they care about. But yeah, we'll see if I ever watch boxing again. I could see myself never doing that because I've had like three bad experiences now. And quite frankly, I just not the biggest fan.
You saw McGregor get hurt a little bit.
Yeah, they stopped it. Exactly. They stopped it before anything could happen. And then at the end of the fight, McGregor's like celebrating because like, hey, look, haha, look, you guys, you just all paid to watch me make like 50, whatever, 100 million, billion dollars that he made. So, and Mayweather too, you know,
Mayweather made over
putting money million. In his pocket. Yeah. It's kind of sad. All right. So we're going to transition into our first main topic of the week. We're going to hit up a week 2 recap and maybe a little bit of a week 3 preview before we get into our two football segments at the end of the show. So Mike, you got a takeaway for me from week 2.
The Giants are ass.
Yeah, the Giants are a bad football team.
The Giants are just...
I got a smile on my face. They play at Philadelphia week 3 this upcoming Sunday. Hoping I can chalk that one up in the W column.
I watched the game, Mike. You were there. It was a struggle. It was humiliating.
It was predictable.
It was arguably predictable, but I have hope because I heard that McAdoo might stop calling plays. And if that happens, we have a shot.
Because you have a shot at what?
At turning this season around.
Okay. They got to go 10-4, and they don't have an easy schedule at all.
I believe me, I've looked at the schedule, I've picked the games. I know it's not easy, but listen, you got the firepower. You just got to find a combination on the line that works, and we're not there right now.
The personnel may not be there ever. So my thing is, Mike, you know that I've been kind of anti-Eli Manning for... ever since I've known you, really. Actually, maybe initially, I was like, you asked me, remember, at one point, is Eli a Hall of Famer? And I said yes.
He still is.
Well, that's actually become a little bit more debatable now, maybe. But I remember one of the
538 article that said he's mediocre?
It wasn't that. It was a 538 podcast that said, yeah, he's kind of average outside of a couple, you know, runs
outside of being top 10 in yards and touchdowns.
Yeah, that's volume era.
That's what the Hall of Fame is about.
Yeah.
It's about leadership. It's about leading categories.
Yeah, but basically since last year, I've just been on this major anti-Eli, you know, just barrage of this dude. You watch him play. I haven't seen him make any really, you know, he makes a couple okay lobs down the field, but mostly just slants. And I think finally... Giants fans are coming around. I think they're starting to turn.
He played well in the second half.
Define well. How many touchdowns? They didn't even score a touchdown. They scored three points.
You're not looking at it the right way.
I mean, I watched the game. He's not good.
But that's not his fault.
Literally, his second best throw of the entire game was when he was getting sacked, and he just threw it straight up, and Sterling Shepard made a catch. Mike, that was the second best play.
You are not watching the same game I'm watching if you think that this is Eli Manning's fault.
I don't think it's entirely his fault. There's no Odell, but, I mean, think about...
There's no time.
I know there's no time, there's no Odell, but think about, you know... And not that a lot of quarterbacks succeed without, you know, offensive lines, but, you know, to me, like, I just my opinion, like, Carson Wentz last year... the receiving core that he had.
The line was better.
He didn't have Lane Johnson. That killed him. But then the receivers they had were way worse than what the Giants have. And he was like arguably better than Eli has been.
You can put all of the best wide receivers you want on a team. If you don't have 2 seconds to throw a ball, you watched Ereck Flowers.
Say it again.
You literally watched a man just pile drive him.
Ezekiel Ansah is a good player.
Yeah, but Ereck Flowers is 320 pounds and 6'5". It's not... You can't put the blame on Eli Manning.
I mean, I'm going to put a fair amount of the blame on Eli Manning.
It's because you're just ignorant.
But, I mean, is Eli Manning not take any blame?
I have never said he doesn't
take any blame. How about that call that's getting all the press where he messed up?
I said that was his fault.
So if that's his fault, that changed the game.
I'm happy that happened because it was a poor decision to rush for a fourth down. The game wasn't out of reach. I wanted a field goal. I think that was the right play.
Yeah, well, we'll see. They look really tough, and we mentioned this last week, and we'd been talking about this before that if they didn't beat the Lions, which they did not do, Now they're looking at a really uphill battle here. They got to go at Philly, at Tampa the next 2 weeks. I mean, there's
against the Chargers, it's their first easy game.
And you're looking at, you know, two games that are probably not favored this week. They're 3.5, 4-point underdogs.
Which isn't that bad. That's really just 1 point.
One point on a neutral field, but you got to play at Philly where they don't have success. And like if they lose these two games, Tampa looked pretty good on Sunday. They're 0-4. They're definitely not a 10-2 team. Even if they lose this week, I don't think that they're a 10-3 team with that schedule that they have. It's a real uphill climb. And, you know, you mentioned this, Mike, as a Giants fan, that the schedule has not been in their favor. I mean, obviously, the Lions game at home, if you want to be a playoff team, you got to win that game.
You got to win that game, but that's not – I mean, the Lions look like they're – playoff team.
The Lions look pretty good. And then, you know, the game at Dallas is tough.
At Dallas, at Philly, at Tampa Bay. Three potential playoff teams right there.
Yeah, for sure. So that was a takeaway there. Mike, anything else that you want to take away from week two?
Chiefs are the real deal.
They are the real deal. I think we could also say the Eagles are the real deal. They played them. I mean, you watched first three quarters of the game or so. I think you actually watched before the Eagles started to lose it.
I had to go work
with my group, but the Eagles hung in there with Kansas City for 2.5 quarters, and they look pretty good. And meanwhile, you know, Kansas City, you know, coming off that big win against New England, they had the whole extra half week to prepare. They should have been favored in the game. They really should have won the game at home.
No Eric Berry,
but everything else was rocking for them. The Eagles sustained a couple injuries themselves, so I was pretty proud of my squad in that one. And then the Chiefs, you know, they look like the real deal. I didn't have them in the playoffs, which I 100% regret right now.
I have them.
I think I had them at 9-7.
I have them at 11-5. I initially, in my first round of All 267, I had them at 13-3, right, Will?
So.
Indeed. Yes. That would be correct.
That looked like it was a good pick right now.
that looks better than not. So they look really good. Let's see. We're looking over this again. Tampa, we mentioned, looked pretty good.
You didn't like?
Well, I think Seattle's become a big worry
for
me. I wasn't able to watch much of the game, but to see them not put up a touchdown, I think, against San Francisco.
Niners.
And it was close late. I mean, and at home.
Unreal.
Yikes.
I mean, I have Russell Wilson on my fantasy team.
It's no bueno.
I've been working all week to try and get a trade done.
Yeah, it's not his fault. It's another situation where the offensive line is really hurting him and holding them back.
Yeah,
but that's
it's
a disaster.
Not Russell Wilson's fault now.
That's a disaster. Never is. But that's a disaster situation. And then one game we could both get behind big time was the Denver Broncos just
absolutely taking it to
the Dallas Cowboys in that big Sunday afternoon game. They just pummeled them. Zeke gave up. It was a great story.
Pounded on the sidelines.
Yeah.
I love to see it. I love it.
Yeah, so that was a good outcome for us as the
feed
Eagles.
Feed him L's.
Yeah, feed him the L's. And the Eagles remain in a tie for first place. So I appreciated that.
As bad as the Giants have looked, this week went about as good as it could have.
Well, the Redskins won. That was the only thing. But the Redskins
really aren't the biggest threat. Right. So the Eagles lose. Cowboys lose. Only one game out with a division game. Look, next week. I'm worried they're in must-win territory, but I'm hoping that McAdoo can light a fire. But he hasn't so far. So
yeah, week three is kind of an interesting week because you have a fair amount of those 0-2 teams that maybe shouldn't be 0-2. Think like the Saints and the Giants particularly. Maybe some others are in there that – you know, it's going to be the Chargers for sure, and they play the Chiefs at home. It's hard to imagine those teams falling to 0-3. They kind of get that fire lit under them in the sense that if we lose this game, we're probably out. So you worry that the Giants, at least I worry that the Giants are going to have that kind of game. But honestly, man, they just have not played well in Philadelphia in the recent, 5 years probably? It's been a long time since we played well. So I feel pretty good. And right now, the Eagles' strengths match up really well with the Giants' weaknesses. So that's obviously a game we're really looking forward to. But it's not looking good for...
My Tennessee Titans looked great in the second half.
They're back. They put up 15-1, but they're back.
Hey, this is the initial path I had them going on. Losing to the Raiders and running the table at 15-0. But no, they looked good in the second half.
Yeah, and they
took
them
a little while.
They quieted all the thoughts of maybe Jacksonville could be the team in the AFC South, which is kind of ridiculous. And then also Thursday Night Football, this year's Dak, Deshaun Watson, got a win. All he does is win.
That was ugly.
Yeah,
man.
ugly game.
And another ugly one again this week.
Oh, 49ers,
a barn burner of the 49ers at the Rams.
Rams at the 49ers.
But that is going to be just...
Jared Goff, Brian Hoyer.
Football.
Couple young head coaches.
Magic.
With ties to the Redskins, huh?
Love it.
Spin it however you want. Get a little something interesting going on.
Gotta get something interesting there. But, you know, that is a game that I had to give the 49ers because, you know, got to give them some win somewhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you have to, and they're not going 0-16. Yeah, and then looking forward to week three, kind of a down slate, obviously, at the 1 o'clock games. You have the Eagles and the Giants, which is going to draw the attention of most fans. Obviously, yeah. The Giants have struggled, but that's always an interesting game. I'm kind of looking forward to that Kansas City Chiefs-Chargers game.
I'm a fan of the Seahawks-Titans game.
Seahawks-Titans is a very interesting matchup.
I mean, I'm always a fan to watch the Titans.
Yeah.
I always love watching them.
Yeah, that's a good point.
My boy Corey Davis got out there. Had a down week this week, but hopefully he comes back. Mariota, how do you not root for Marcus Mariota?
I know. I've read stuff that said he's actually, like, the best leader in the right. NFL, like, of all the quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe secondary to Carson Wentz, but...
Classic.
Yeah.
Hall of Famer Carson Wentz.
Basically. I've heard good things. He's
from Colin Coward. The
still on the bandwagon. Carson Wentz, you know, up and down game, but, you know, you gotta love what you see from the kid. And then, you know, you kind of get these prime times games this week. Obviously, obviously, we hit on the Rams 49ers. And then we got the Sunday morning breakfast game in London, Ravens at the Jags, classic game out there in London. And then Sunday nights, Oakland at Washington.
Orange juice and bagels for that game.
Yeah. And then the Cowboys at Cardinals, which is kind of looking like an awful Monday night game. The games aren't too appealing.
They're really not good.
Kind of an interesting slate. I would say I'd pick out the Panthers Saints as it could be interesting game. Vikings Bucks. I think if Bradford's
have looked good.
No, not at all. The Panthers are 2-0, and I think they could be 3-0, but they've looked horrendous. Cam Newton looks horrendous.
Shout out to Evanston last week.
Yeah, they're still trucking on with the giving up 6 points in two games. And then I think if Samuel Bradford can come back.
Right, so what,
yeah, had, that's a big had, time game.
He had an MRI or MCL injury? Or?
It's non-contact, which
that's,
is worrisome.
Never like to hear
and
that.
Yeah, unlucky guy. Matt was his teammate in St. Louis,
he
was saying, you know, it's just too bad that, you know, the luck didn't break his way. But that could be a potentially good game because I think if he plays, the Bucks and the Vikings are also two of those wild card contending teams. And then the big thing also from last week, and I think this could be a really good 1 o'clock game too. The Falcons probably look like the best team in the NFL right now. Took it to Green Bay, which they've done, in the regular season last year and definitely in the postseason last year.
Yeah.
They took it to them. And then this week they did it again. So I think Atlanta at Detroit can be a really interesting
game
because
Detroit,
they beat up on Arizona, not that impressive. But then you go into the Giants on Monday Night Football and they kind of handled them. I mean, not that the Giants had a ton, but they handled them. So they
have a decent defense and their offense is going to be good. Matt Stafford at the helm.
He's a top 10 quarterback.
You got Golden Tate, Marvin Jones.
Kenny Galladay.
Eric Ebron's looked good this season. And, you know, the biggest thing for them, and they were putting it up on Monday night.
They're making fun of the
Detroit
car industry.
What a horrible animation.
Yeah. They
just had a
taking
car.
It right to them where it hurts.
If they haven't suffered enough about the automotive industry collapse, they just got to always remind them. But the running game needs to show like it did on Monday night.
Yeah, they ended up breaking out a couple big runs for Amir Abdullah there.
They were able to control the game, and you know, Stafford only throws for 120 yards and they win.
Which is pretty shocking. Someone told me that, like, oh, I was looking at the stats and I couldn't believe Stafford only threw for 120. I was like, oh, really? He only did that? And I mean, really, as the Giants' ineptitude on offense probably contributed more. But, no, I mean, if they win this game at home, they're a 3-0 team and they beat the Falcons, they would have a road win against the Giants. Like, they kind of started looking like a pretty formidable team.
Yeah.
I wouldn't bet on them to win a playoff game or anything like
Never
that.
Will.
But
Never
if they
will.
Go 3-0, and they're looking like a playoff team again. You know,
yeah.
And that'd be pretty impressive from the Lions. Okay, so that'll do it for our main football topic. So before we get into our second topic of the day, Will, we're going to bring you on here. Texas USC, college football game of the season so far. I watched it with you. You were a little antsy, very antsy the whole time.
Very antsy.
Your boy, your friend from high school was the quarterback for Texas.
He blew it, but he
ended up, you know, he got him back in the game late. And for a true freshman playing in that kind of venue, he played a really good game. Will, you have any thoughts on this game, which was really, first three quarters were lousy, but the end of it was fantastic.
A little bit of a heartbreaker, you know, losing in double overtime. But Texas team showed a lot of fight that I wasn't expecting. You know, wasn't even expecting close from that much of the game.
That's not the homerism we've come to expect.
Yeah, that's not on this show.
Not on this show.
We
are
blindly,
but
blindly faithful.
When it came down to it, USC had a true freshman walk-on kicker that made...
That was... Will was dancing to that tune. He was going, true freshman walk-on kicker. He just said, hyping it up.
Made a kick to send it to overtime and the winner in double overtime. So if that's the way you're going to lose, then got to give it to the kid. Missed his first kick of the season earlier in that game. So props to him for bouncing back.
So, yeah. Will, do you see Texas in the college football playoff?
This year?
Yeah.
No way.
No way. No? Two losses. I mean, two losses. Remember, Will, they
a
lost to Maryland at home.
A Big 12 team won't make it. I mean, a one-loss Big 12 team probably won't make the playoff.
They lost to Maryland at home.
At home.
Yeah.
That
51 to 41. Remember that?
Yes, I do remember.
Okay,
that.
I just wanted
to different quarterback who might be back under center next week, Thursday night in Ames, Iowa.
And that quarterback did not go to Westlake High School like
Will. Correct.
Yeah.
Hope he's not the one jogging out there for the first drive, but you never know what the coach staff's going
to
do.
If you guys would like to fact check Will, go back two or three episodes and just listen to his part, and you'll see just how wrong he was.
He was sniping him as a top 15 team.
As Mike says, great social media department. They hype you up before the season.
That's what they do.
Valid.
And then, you know, it's kind of interesting. We go from there's a whole slew the last couple weeks of really good college football games in primetime on Saturday night because you also had, not that the game was close, but Clemson, Louisville was a good game on. And then previous weeks you had Ohio State at Oklahoma. And now this week the go-to game I think is Penn State, my favorite
Iowa.
College football team, not UVA, in Iowa. And you know one thing, Mike, that we've never talked about on this show that I wanted to bring up every episode, and it just slips my mind because it's so fitting that it does. Let's give a little UVA football shout-out. 2-1.
2-1.
On pace for
8-4
in a bowl game.
Bowl game season is back in swing.
Yes.
A convincing win over UConn.
Yeah, so Kurt Benkert completed a couple passes down the field, which is...
More than a couple.
I mean, that's... At UConn, thank you guys for coming into our stadium and letting
us a win.
Getting us some confidence in. We're like double-digit dogs at Boise this week. We're playing on the Smurf turf Friday night. But, you know, if UVA can somehow, some way pull a win out there, I'm going to be watching.
I smell a ranking?
I smell a bowl game. I wouldn't go to the
ranking. I'm going for a ranking.
So we play Boston College, Boise at Boise, and then I think we come home the next, we get a bye week, then we come home and play Duke. If you're 4-1, you got confidence, you're a UVA team, Kurt Benkert, who knows?
Come on.
Bowl game.
4-1 team with a win over Boise State.
That's the big.
That's a ranking.
No, that's got to be top 25.
That's
not going to happen.
That's the big if there. But shout out to UVA football. And as things go, we'll try and do a little bit better at getting them in the show. Basketball, we'll do a much better job of just
yes,
because that team, they actually win. So we appreciate that as sports fans. All right, so we're going to get into our second main topic of the night. This has been in the news as of the last week or so. The NBA, under the direction of Commissioner Adam Silver, is pushing to reform the draft lottery. Pretty big changes want to do.
Yeah.
So the main things are, before we get into breaking it down, is that they want to reduce the percentages of the top three teams, which now sit at 25, 19.9, and 15.6, to 14% for the top three, and then reducing every other team by about 1% to 2% just to balance things out.
Yeah, so basically that will really discourage the total tank to get that number one spot. And I think it's a good move, honestly. I think that it's gotten pretty bad. And it's made the regular season a joke to watch, honestly. And I'm glad Silver is at least doing something. We don't know if this is the right move, if it's the wrong move, but you just like to see initiatives being taken by a commissioner because it shows that they're trying to better the game.
Yeah, and I think that bottom-out tank, the Sixers-esque tank, is really kind of despicable. I mean, from a pure competition standpoint, long-term view, it's the right basketball
move. Right.
It really is, and that is just, by definition, it's a problem. So I think to try and mitigate that a little bit is a good move. Like you said, you don't know if this is the best way. I think this is a good idea for an article title or article topic if anyone wants to look into it. What would be the actual best way to reform the lottery?
Yeah.
And I think you can get some pretty good insights just off some of the data projections and whatnot. And I think I've seen some crazy ideas thrown out there, like doing a wheel where like the draft selections are not based at all by the standings. It's just like in over a 30-year period, you'll get every pick from 1 to 30. That's like been an idea thrown out there that I've seen that was several years ago.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
That's a lot of
seasons. That's a different approach for sure.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I think that, you know, it's a good move. And I, you know, it's just not fun to watch a team go out there and just lose.
No. Now, the Philadelphia fans, and you give them credit, I'm a Philadelphia football fan. I mean, the fans in Philly, for all their sports, are passionate and they're smart sports-wise. And they were really good about getting on the back of Sam Hinkie and in the process there. Obviously, that's become a big, you know, thing, trust the process. And it's turned into, you know, Embiid's health pending and the performance of Fultz and Ben Simmons, like, it's turned into, they have a really exciting young core.
Yeah.
Obviously, Dario Saric is there. But, you know, most, it's really, that's unacceptable for the NBA. You don't want a team, and you're not going to have fans as loyal as the Sixers in most places that are going to support just, you know, losing, like, literally trying to lose 65 out of 82 games.
And more. Just kind of give, like, a little more background on the idea of tanking and why you only see it in the NBA. It's interesting because you would think that a system where the first overall pick isn't guaranteed to the worst record, you would think that tanking would be more common in football or hockey,
right?
Or
like,
or
if you're
like
the
that.
Jets or right. the Colts, like, let me lose every single game this year. Let me get Sam Darnold. If you're the Colts, I can trade him for
right.
like 4 first-round picks. If I'm the Jets, I'm set.
And so the difference between the NBA is A, there's only five players playing at a time. So you can have a much bigger influence on a game in the NBA by being a singular stud than you can in the NFL or another sport.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter who's on your team. If you have LeBron, you're
exactly
gone. You're basically guaranteed a finals trip if you're in the Eastern Conference, or, you know, it's one player that impacts massive. So you got to hit on, you got to get that superstar.
Right. And secondly is the transition and the speed and the quality of players coming into the draft, I think personally, are higher than in the NFL and other leagues, and that's why tanking matters so much more. It's because you get much more NBA-level prospects, NBA-ready prospects that are coming out as that number one pick.
Well, I think as the number one pick, yeah. So at the top end of the drafts, you look at some guys, and the success rate of number one picks versus number two picks is a pretty astounding difference. I think if you go down the list where you have, like, Derek Williams was a number two pick and Evan Turner was a number two pick, whereas the number one picks, for the most part, obviously, you know, Anthony Bennett's in there.
Right.
But for the most part, you're getting, at one point in their careers, a superstar, whether it's John Wall or Derek Rose or Blake Griffin, Carl Anthony Towns, just down the line.
Right.
So that top end talent.
Well, that's what I'm talking about with tanking, is the goal is to get the number one pick.
Right. And in football, you know, the best player in the draft can come, you know, J.J. Watt was 12. I think
right.
Aaron Donald was also 12. Or, you know, they're in that range.
In that range.
Where you can get the best player, you know, not necessarily number one. We haven't even seen Myles Garrett yet, you know, so we don't know about him. But, like, just for example, you can get better players a little bit later on. So, yeah, those top picks really matter so much in the NBA, especially because if you hit on that one superstar, everything kind of falls into place from there.
And the other thing is the depth isn't there in the NBA. So it's a big difference to get the first overall pick.
Versus eight.
Like, even that far of a difference, I mean, that. A lot of second-round picks and end-of-the-first-round picks, you just don't really
care.
Those
guys are worthless. Yeah,
it's not worth it for the Cavs or the Warriors to have their first-round pick. It's not really going to turn it on. You get your one hit. You get your Isaiah Thomas. You get your Kawhi Leonard.
Your Malcolm Brogdon.
But it just doesn't happen that often.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, that you want to think about with these guys in the NBA is that, like, Jonathan Isaac, he's the 6th overall pick this year to Orlando. And I'm just like, I don't think that guy's going to be good. Like, well, give me Markelle Fultz, or, you know, I'm a big Lonzo guy. But, like, give me one of those guys, you know, and the drop down from that to Jonathan Isaac at 6, or, like, you think of Noah Vonleh went number 8 a couple years ago. Haven't even heard from him since.
Right.
Like, those lottery picks, they get worthless real quick in certain circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm happy with it. I don't know about you.
I hope they go through with it to some degree. Like we've mentioned, it's hard to know what's really the best method for this moving forward. And, you know, the point of American sports in a lot of ways is to kind of get that parity, get that, you know, almost communism-esque feel. If you stink,
right.
we're going to prop you up. And I think the NBA, they try that. But when teams have just abused it to the degree that they have, which is bottoming out with no remorse whatsoever, because legitimately it's a good strategy. You know, there's got to be some sort of way to incentivize not allowing that, and I think that's what they're trying to do, and I appreciate that.
I'm happy with it overall.
Yeah, and an interesting thing, too, to consider with these teams that tank. So there's actually an interesting report that came out, I believe it was a couple of days ago, about the amount of teams that are losing money in the NBA. For all the money that's come in, you know, a lot of teams are still not making money. And so I remember at one point reading about, you know, the Pacers. So the Pacers, obviously, with Paul George, they had to trade him. A lot of people were thinking, oh, why not just bottom out? And if you read into their situation, it's like they play in Indiana, pretty small market. They really, like, cannot afford to lose money, and that's what's going to happen if they're as bad as the Sixers were. And you know, in their market, it's just unaffordable. So it kind of creates an imbalance among the teams. Some teams have resources to tank, like that's kind of contrary to what your intuition would be, but some teams don't. So it's really not – this is kind of a way to level the playing field in that regard too.
Yeah, so I mean 14 of the 30 NBA teams lost money.
Yeah, it's crazy that's the amount of money that they
make. I mean, when you think about it, like these – The TV deals and all that that comes into the NBA, you would expect all of them to be profitable. I mean, but you have teams on here, Milwaukee, Minnesota. I mean, these are small market teams. But I mean, the Wizards, the Washington Wizards,
they have a big salary. That's a problem for them. But no, you think about a team like the Lakers, and this is going back to the point I had about Indiana, is that they're a team that they have literally the resources to tank. It's kind of a funny concept to think about. But the Lakers have been, I think they haven't won more than 25 or 30 games the last 4 years, and they still lead the league by a mile in terms of net income from the season just because of their TV deal, their brand recognition. TV deal and the global reach that they have, and you know they still have a great legacy. But a team like that, like what's the harm? If we have four bad seasons, we can stomach the blow, whereas Indiana, you lose that fan base and you lose money, and that's just not sustainable. So there's an imbalance created there, and hopefully the draft lottery reform kind of works to solve that.
Yeah, it's a great – and that's another reason why it's a great movie, because you don't want teams – you see it in baseball. You know, you see big market teams that are able to just spend more and are better because of that. And, you know, for me, I'm a Red Sox fan. You know, I enjoy winning, but I don't really like – the idea of just being able to spend more money and then be better.
Yeah.
And then in some cases it's the same kind of concept here. You're able to just lose more because you're able to,
stomach it. Yeah.
Right. And then you're just going to end up being better in the long run. And I'm glad Adam Silver is doing something to fix it.
Yeah. That's an unfair balance. I just thought that was an interesting thing to bring up. I wonder if they do it for this season. I don't know if it's proposed for this season or next season. That'd be a pretty big shift, though, for these teams that have really set themselves up to be really bad. You think like the Chicago Bulls as a team that's really kind of planned on bottoming out. What are some of the other teams at the bottom? Like the Hawks are going to be really bad this year. The Nets don't even have their picks, so they're kind of irrelevant for this. They don't have
the Sixers. The Nets have their picks next year.
Or the Cavs have their
picks. Yeah, next year.
Yeah. So there's certain teams that, you know, this would kind of be a bad blow to them. I bet their owners are going to fight it tooth and nail or prolong as long as they can, because that's kind of drawn the short end there after a team like the Sixers profited off it so much. You know, they only landed the number one pick, but they're in the top three every year for 4 or 5 years, whatever it was. And so they're able to land some blue chippers, you know, Embiid and Simmons, and they had the resources to trade up for Fultz.
Exactly.
So it's kind of a tough break for the teams that are looking to get in on the tank game late.
Yeah, so that change would come in or for the 2019 draft.
Okay, so the Bulls are okay.
The Bulls are fine. Yeah.
They're trying to get their Marvin Bagley or Michael Porter Jr. whoever that is.
All right, let's do some all 267.
Yeah, let's get into it. So this is going to be a little similar from last week in the sense that Mike remains on top. So Mike went 13-3 this week, which
is actually very impressive.
That's
pretty good.
We picked these games, as always. These are our picks. They're locked in before week one.
We haven't changed any of
these. I mean, I guess we're going through our picks here, and I probably – the only one I would have changed is probably would have picked New England instead of the Saints, which is the one where you got me on, actually.
Yep.
Maybe would have shifted to Houston there. But no, so we go 13-3, you know, picking these games a couple weeks in advance. I went 12-4. So Mike's up on me on the season. He's up. He's got 24 correct. I have 22.
So I actually missed all three of my losses this week were NFC East.
That's called bias right there. That's a homer alert.
We love to see the homer alert.
The homer alert in full stride there. On the contrary, I got every single NFC East game correct. Didn't pick
besides
my Eagles.
Besides the Giants.
Besides that, they're at the bottom of the list.
Oh, so you didn't get all NFC.
I was better. Yeah, I was better than you. I at least picked against the Eagles and the Cowboys.
I gave the Eagles the game. I don't know why. I didn't expect them to win.
Yeah, you remember the declaration I had at the end of last episode. I was like, you know what? The Eagles are winning this week. They made it a game late, but when I did these picks a couple weeks ago, I knew all along. I was chalking that one up as a loss the Eagles
you're two-faced.
Oh, when it comes to the Eagles, anything goes here. So looking forward to next week, we actually have a little bit more divergence here.
Yeah, this is gonna be a make or break week because we have just looking at it. I see five games
that we
differ on.
That's a lot. And then even last week, we had a fair amount. I picked up some that we had different. You picked up others. One more, obviously. But Mike, looking at yours, is there any game that you regret that you picked?
My biggest regret is the Jags over the Ravens.
In London. It's not even a home game.
I didn't realize it was in London when I made this pick. That's user error.
That's on you. Squarely on you.
But I was pretty comfortable with it after the first week, but they got thoroughly embarrassed
at home. And Baltimore looks – they haven't played. They played Cincy, and they played Cleveland, so they haven't played anyone. But they've muscled these teams, though. You got to –
their defense looks good.
But there's a difference between, like, beating bad teams and emphatically beating bad teams. They've emphatically beat, you know, the Browns and the Bengals. So they look like a pretty solid team.
I'm praying they ride Fournette to a big three touchdown game, 200 yards. Bortles comes in, does nothing wrong, throws no interceptions, and I see a win in the future for the Jaguars there. But otherwise, I'm a little worried.
Yeah.
And I feel like I could go under on that one. What about you, Mike?
I think my biggest mistake here. I feel okay. I got some interesting ones. Like I have the Bills over the Broncos.
Hate that pick.
You might, but that's okay. I also have the Chargers winning over the Chiefs in
also hate that pick.
Not San Diego, but in Los Angeles, where there are apparently no Chargers fans. My biggest
R.I.P. San Diego.
Yeah, my biggest. The one I'm feeling the worst about, I should say, is that Redskins at home against Oakland.
When you boil it down, it's a bad pick.
Yeah, Oakland, I actually didn't give them that game week one against it. So I actually had Oakland going to 1-2 after this week originally. I still had them in the playoff mix. But remember, this all kind of stems back to that one prediction I had where I was like, everyone's going to chill on Derek Carr. Through two games, not looking so hot on that one. Washington, obviously, they already sustained a home loss to the Eagles, who are probably, at best, a little bit worse than the Raiders, so the Raiders are probably a better team than the Eagles.
I think the Raiders win this game.
So if the Redskins lose at home to the Eagles, like, and, you know, they barely beat the Rams in L.A. also,
right.
not St. Louis, but in L.A., it's going to be hard. It's hard for me to believe that the Raiders or the Redskins are going to win this game.
In primetime.
Primetime. Kirk Cousins still hasn't looked good.
Kirk Cousins has looked like poop.
Yeah, he still hasn't looked, any level of formidable, so especially against the Eagles, which is the game I clued in on, obviously. But we'll see. You never know with these kind of games. But that's the one where really I probably feel the worst about. And I think an interesting game this Sunday, maybe not the most exciting, but I think the Bills can give the Broncos a run for their money. The Broncos,
I do not see that.
The
dude.
Broncos look like one of the best teams in the NFL right now. Simeon's been playing out of his mind. The defense is as good as advertised. But, you know, they got to travel cross country. The Bills have played. They played the Panthers tough. I don't know how much that says.
That's not that big of a deal.
I think they got Bills Mafia home field advantage.
Yeah.
I think that game is closer than most people expect.
I'm a fan of the Broncos. I thought they looked really, really, really good. I thought the no-fly zone looks better than last year, honestly.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because they lost TJ Ward and they lose him. They cut him. I think that, you know, the Bills just won't be able to muster any offense in this game, and Broncos pound at home.
Yeah, it's very realistic. All right, so we're going to move.
Let's fast forward a little bit.
Fast forward. Yep, we're going to move from week three. It's already week three coming up. And we're going to go forward to, it's already 1.5 times speed, so it's already sounding like the zoom forward. We're going to go to get dime and garbage time. Mike, what do you got?
I'm going to stick with the Chiefs at Broncos. Both teams looked really good. They looked high quality. We talked about it. We just heard how I love the Broncos. Chiefs put a walloping on the Eagles until the last couple seconds.
No, that's not true.
And
that's just not true.
They put a walloping on them.
They didn't. They were losing like halfway through the third quarter. Carson
fine,
Wentz
fine,
wins.
Fine, fine, fine.
No walloping. We held our own.
I'm exaggerating, but the Chiefs.
We played the Chiefs better than
right,
the Patriots
right,
played the
all
Chiefs.
Right, all right, all right, all right, all right. All right. So the Chiefs look like a high-quality team. The Broncos look like a high-quality team. I can see that game deciding the division.
Yeah, I can see. It's hard. I'm just not quite as big on Denver. I still, you know, think back. They played the first two games at home. Obviously,
right,
the one against
right.
the Chargers. I gotta keep crying. I'm almost saying San Diego.
It's hard.
The Chargers, they won kind of on a block field goal that would have sent the game into overtime. They walloped the Cowboys, which is, you know,
it's
one of
good,
the one
ball,
of the better
I mean.
Wins that anyone's had this season.
Yeah.
You know, when you factor in how much they beat them by. But to me, I just don't know if the Broncos are going to hang around at the Chiefs level. I didn't even have the Chiefs in the playoffs, but I mean, they've put together two really solid wins. Obviously, at New England's a good of a win as anyone's going to get. So these two teams have two of the best wins so far this season. And then I think, you know, beating the Eagles at home, you know, relatively convincingly, it wasn't a walloping, as Mike said. But, you know, they had about two touchdowns going into the last 10 seconds of the game before the Eagles ended up having the Hail Mary shot to tie it, which, you know, a whole different story. But the Chiefs look pretty good. I think it's a three-horse race, though, in that division, potentially, because Oakland's going to be there. Yeah. And I still don't think the Chargers are that bad. They're a couple of kicks away from being 2-0 themselves.
Yeah, I mean, but it's the story of the Chargers every year. Right? They just can't win the close games, and at some point in the NFL, it becomes about winning those close games.
Yep, and a Young Ho is not making the difference for them. That's their kicker's name. Young Ho,
poor kid. Kim? I feel bad for him.
Kim?
I don't know. It's last name.
I think it's Kim.
I feel bad for him.
Yeah, I know.
First kick wasn't his fault. Second kick, he just pushed it right a little bit because he's got that soccer draw on it and didn't come around. It's tough.
Yeah, that is tough.
Who do you got?
I am also going to stay put. Cowboys at Philadelphia Eagles, both lost this week at an AFC West team. So the two teams, and I think we hit on this last week too.
Yeah.
Two teams that that I picked, they both lost to the two teams that Mike picked for the Week 17 game. And I think it just shows that a lot of people seem to think Dallas is like far and away the best team in this division. I don't think so. I think the Eagles are going to be running step by step with them the whole season. Unbiased opinion right there. And I still think that game... that could be a division-deciding game.
I mean, I'm not going to say it's not going to be a division-deciding game. I think it could be a division-deciding game at 9-7.
That's potentially possible. I still think the Eagles get to 10. Right now, I think one of those teams definitely gets to 10.
We'll see.
It might be in that game that they get up to 10. But I think both those teams are pretty good. Maybe the loser can sneak into the wild card. There's some good NFC teams out there between the Bucks, Vikings, maybe Lions. You know, that aren't the division leaders. But no, I still am holding on to some hope that that game ends up being a really big time game.
I mean, at this point, I'm not going to go out there and say that the Giants are going to be there because they don't look like they deserve to be. So I'm never going to say the Redskins are going to make the playoffs. So, I mean, it makes sense that I can definitely see the Cowboys at Eagles being a big game. And hopefully it ends in a draw. And they both miss out.
The NFL, somehow. Yeah. So I'm still looking forward to that one. We'll see. We'll have, you know, a big Giants Eagles recap for you guys. I know how much you love to hear about those two teams. So next week we'll get into that one because, you know, that's kind of our Super Bowl.
It's our
regular season. At least for us to
live for.
For us too, you know, when you go and you have friends that are fans of the other team, and it's kind of a good rivalry. It's always exciting.
A jersey bet on that game.
We do. I'll be wearing. Well, I won't be, but if somehow the Eagles lose, I'll be rocking Odell on Monday. Mike will be taking the future GOAT Carson Wentz for himself for Monday. So yeah, that's a big game coming up. So we will be back next week. It looks like we're going to be bringing on a guest, a good friend of mine, Stephen Green, talk a little soccer.
Get ready for some football.
Football, and then football with Stephen Green. Hopefully the times work out to bring him on. If not, we'll figure something out, as we always do. All right, we'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for listening.
We like sports and we don't care who knows. From shooting hoops to the Super Bowl. We like sports and we don't care who knows. Football, tennis, hockey, golf.